This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're still more than 6 months away from the national party conventions, and it already feels as if the presidential campaign has been running forever. In fact, the voting began earlier than ever, just a little over a month ago, and there have been any number of complaints about coverage by the news media. About what has been covered, too much horse race, too many predictions, too many polls, and about what hasn't, not enough on the issues, not enough about the so-called minor candidates, and not enough about where campaigns are getting and spending their money. In just a moment, Tom Rosensteel of the Project for Excellence in Journalism joins us to talk about coverage in general. A bit later, NPR Ombudsman Lisa Shepard will talk specifically about listener complaints about NPR's coverage, and we'll also talk with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. If you want to know more about how the media covers the campaigns or if you have specific complaints, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later this hour, five myths about those nefarious neocons on the opinion page this week. But first, how the media covers the campaign. Tom Rosensteel directs the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He's here in Studio 3A. And Tom, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And the campaign started earlier than ever, and it seems to be raising an unprecedented level of complaints.
That goes hand in hand. The more the media covers something, I think the more people are grumpy about it. This campaign started a year ago in February of 2007. It was the second biggest story behind the war. And by the end of 2007, and we monitor this every day ad nauseum out of 70,000 stories, the campaign ended up the biggest story of 2007. At this year, that's just gone out of control. Last week, half of the stories that we monitored were about the campaign.
Half the stories?
Yeah.
And you also monitor them for how they portray various candidates, positively, negatively. There have been some complaints by some campaigns that they, for example, get bad press.
And particularly we monitor sort of the race for exposure. What candidates are getting that airtime that is often considered to be oxygen for the campaign.
So-called free media.
That was the way that it was described back in the 1980s. They now call it earned media because they think it's harder to get than they shouldn't call it free. And there are some surprises there. Mike Huckabee had a very good week in the polls. He last week got 2% of the news hold, the airtime and space in the media. So he is winning voters without a lot of free media and without a lot of paid media because he doesn't have money for ads either.
Mm-hmm. There is also how the campaigns are portrayed. And thus far, there's been a lot of complaints from the Clinton campaign that they get bad press.
Yeah. Now, we don't monitor that on a weekly basis. It takes longer for us to tabulate the tone of coverage. But the Clinton campaign certainly went on the war path against one of the cable networks, MSNBC, last week, after one of their guest hosts, who was actually a regular staffer, used the word "pimped out" to describe the way that the Clinton campaign was using daughter Chelsea to help with her mother's cause. I think that MSNBC was very quick to apologize. The language is so crude and sort of unperceptive that I think on any basis it doesn't really pass muster. But then the Clinton campaign pressed that further to describe a pattern of bias, as they saw it, against Hillary Clinton. I would say one thing as a general rule, both for campaign coverage and after 25 years of being a press critic, and that is beware of politicians who critique the press. Their motive is usually more self-serving than it is social science.
You also monitor how much coverage is devoted to various kinds of issues, to tactics, to polls, to issues, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, last year, in the first 6 months of the year, in 2007, when the polls, we all knew, were going to be basically popularity and name recognition polls, and thus really shouldn't be given a lot of credence. 60% of the coverage was focused around polling, horse race tactics and strategy, and that was a long time ago. That number has almost certainly gone up, And I think, you know, arguably during the during this period we're in now, where it's rapid fire event after event, rapid fire caucus followed by primary, this is a horse race, and this is probably the moment in a campaign where journalists would most vociferously justify horse race coverage, even press critics might defend it.
Our guest is Tom Rosensteel, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Andrew. Andrew with us from Mason City in Iowa.
Yes, thank you for taking my call today. I just had a question, general statement, then I'll take my answer off the air here. I'm a big Ron Paul supporter, and he's a 10-term congressman. He's been named the taxpayer's best friend. And he broke a single-day fundraising record, and he raised over $6 million in one day, yet he receives little to no media coverage, and pretty much any media coverage that you see on him is bad media coverage. I'm just wondering, I guess, what your opinion is on how much the media has an influence on who's elected and who's not. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Andrew.
Well, I think it raises obviously one of the fundamental questions. Is press coverage a self-fulfilling prophecy? Can a candidate who doesn't get press coverage win votes, or do you need the exposure, the oxygen of attention? Last week, the week right before Super Tuesday, the day the coverage had ended February 3rd, Ron Paul was a significant or primary figure in 0% of the stories that we analyzed, 600 stories across 48 different news outlets. Andrew is correct in suggesting that the press has discounted the chances of Ron Paul having any success. The fundraising that he success that he's having is one of the traditional metrics that journalists use to test viability. If somebody's raising money, usually that translates into some attention. For a variety of reasons, which are, you know, some of them are obvious and some of them are mysterious, Ron Paul is gets less coverage than he does raise money, and he gets less coverage than he gets votes. You know, we can go on and on about this, but there's no doubt, it's an objective fact, that the press has decided Ron Paul is not a viable candidate.
Let's talk with Joyce. Joyce with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is essentially, do you think these 24-hour news channels are what's driving all this horse race business? And to be honest with you, I am just about sick and tired of it. Enough is enough, and I would much rather, instead of, you know, the cool maps that everyone has on TV now, I'd rather hear the candidates actually state their positions. And the debates, I personally think, need to be on not pay TV. I mean, all debates have been on, you know, cable channels, and I don't think that's fair to the majority of people that don't can't pay for that. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks, Joyce.
Well, she raises two very important questions. First, about where the debate should be. And the fact is that not everybody gets cable. Not everybody can afford it, and it's not available in every community. The cable channels like to stage debates because they're good for cable ratings. 8 million people watched the California debate staged by CNN, which was enough to beat Celebrity Apprentice, Donald Trump's reality program on NBC, and that it doesn't get much better than that for a cable channel. If you get anywhere close to what is on a broadcast channel, you're doing great. So there is an element here of the cable channels staging debates, not just out of civic mindedness. Then to the question of cable news in general. It's interesting. We deconstruct how cable's put together, how much of it is interview, how much of it is live stand-up by people, how much of it is taped stories where the reporter sort of can write to the pictures and verify what they say. And 70% of the time on cable is live. It's an extemporaneous medium. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One is it's cheaper to do it that way. You don't need as many people. And the other is that if things are changing or you want to create the illusion that you're up to the minute and this is breaking news, then live suits that. the reality is, three-quarters of the time that that a story is updated, it's basically a straight repetition. In our analysis, very little of the updates contain new information. So what does that do in terms of the way the coverage, what the coverage is about? I think there is an inevitable tendency, given the amount of time that they have to fill on cable, to spin things forward. You spend a certain amount of time talking about what's happened, and then you inevitably sort of move toward, well, what might happen next? Cable news covers this campaign basically twice as much, devotes twice as much of their news hole to it as other media do. They've found that it's good for ratings. There's a lot of interest in the campaign. And the more time you have to fill, I think the more you just sort of, it lends itself to prognostication, to anticipation. And we've had problems with polls, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think that cable is more guilty than other media of saying, okay, so what's going to happen next?
Mm-hmm. Another thing is, do the races in both parties get equal coverage, just in terms of Democrats and Republicans? And, well, I hate to project, but is the Republican contest now going to get less coverage, since it appears Senator McCain is likely to be the candidate?
The reality is the Republican race has gotten less coverage all along. For much of 2007, two-thirds of the coverage was about Democrats, and only one-third was about Republicans. Most of this year, Obama and Clinton have far outstripped the other candidates in coverage. Last week was the first week that we saw a Republican candidate, John McCain, after his Super Tuesday wins, lead the pack in overall coverage. But after that, it was Obama, Clinton, and then Romney, for sort of getting hosed, was a distant fourth. So there has been consistently more interest in the Democratic race this year. That may reflect the fact that there was more interest by Democrats. It may reflect the greater enthusiasm of Democrats, but it may reflect some other things as well.
We're covering the campaigns today, covering the coverage, that is. What are your gripes? We're taking your calls, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the press and presidential campaigns in a moment. NPR's ombudsman will join us, and we'll get her view of NPR's coverage. But right now, we're talking with Tom Rosensteel, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Of course, we want to hear from you. What's your review of the coverage? What would you like to have seen more of or less? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us now from our bureau in New York is NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. David, nice of you to be with us.
You bet.
And we were talking with Tom Rosensteel just a second ago. The media, very, very interested in the future, who the nominee will eventually be, how the race is going to play out in Texas and Pennsylvania and Ohio, not necessarily people saying so much about what happened yesterday.
Well, and one of the perfect examples of that was, I believe, in one of the debates, you had CNN's Wolf Blitzer asking Senators Clinton, Obama, well, Senator Clinton, you know, would you accept being the running mate for Senator Obama, and vice versa? It was almost as though they were trying to achieve closure before, of course, the result had been determined.
And last week when Mitt Romney pulled out, speculation on the 2012 race.
Yeah, well, that was almost self-mocking. I mean, they were you could see sort of the body language and the voices, people at once raising it and kind of making fun of themselves for having done so. But indeed, you started to hearing that, and I just sort of laughed and said, wow, instead of a year and a half, it's going to be 4.5 years?
Mm-hmm. There has also been, as we also heard, complaints that so-called minor candidates, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't cover them, they will not emerge. And then there's the case of, well, Governor Mike Huckabee, who did not get an awful lot of coverage and sort of emerge and won the Iowa caucuses.
Well, you know, Huckabee sort of wins my vote for the roller coaster candidate. He got almost nothing from the beginning of last year till November, where suddenly it occurred to people that he might actually be out hustling and out organizing people in Iowa. He got this huge sweep of coverage leading up to Iowa, enormous rush of coverage out of Iowa, and he kind of disappeared again in New Hampshire, South Carolina. And then suddenly he did well again in southern states with heavy, you know, evangelical, social conservative voters. And, you know, and he sort of spanked Senator McCain, metaphorically, of course, in some of the results over the past week. So, you know, all I'm saying is that the press has really waxed and waned over Huckabee. Not somebody I think who one could say has been badly treated by the press. I mean, he's actually been rather favorably treated. Reporters I've talked to have enjoyed his folksy mannerisms, his, you know, while very solidly and explicitly conservative evangelical beliefs, you know, is very user-friendly about expressing those to people who may not share his faith.
Tom Rosenstiel?
I think it also, I think it's interesting, and it reflects in part the metrics that the press tends to use for viability. They see that Huckabee has got talent, but they see not enough money raising and no national organization. And then thus they say, well, regardless of how well he can do in a retail state like Iowa, it can't last, and therefore he gets no coverage, which makes it indeed harder to raise money. So there is what, you know, scientists would call a Heisenberg effect. The observation of the act influences the event that's being observed, and the press, I think, needs to be cautious about that. You know, clearly last week when they gave him 2% coverage and he almost tied McCain in terms of states, there was a disconnect there.
Mm. Well, and there's a fair question about chicken and egg. You know, it didn't prevent voters from sort of understanding that he was out there still possibly a way of either registering a protest or actually trying to prevent Senator McCain from getting the Republican nomination. But it's absolutely true. I mean, it seems just sort of a reaction in one direction of a ton of coverage and then an overreaction in the other. I would say in comparison with somebody like Congressman Ron Paul that the caller raised, two things, one of which is you saw some people of national stature, you know, maybe not of the stature of Bill Clinton or Senator Kennedy, but, you know, some people backing someone like Governor Huckabee, and that the role of governor of a state tends to be much more of a launching pad than something like a lesser known member of Congress. I mean, the last time you know, a member of the House of Representatives became president was when? It certainly wasn't this it's not this young century. It wasn't last century. I'm not sure precisely when it was, but that's not been a launching pad to the Oval Office.
And if you're hearing a slight buzzing sound in the background, I think that's David Folkenflik's friend sending messages to his BlackBerry to tell them that he's on the radio. Let's get a call on the line. This is Ted. Ted from Tucson, Arizona.
Hey, I wanted to start my comments by saying I actually was I was an Obama volunteer and I'm an Obama supporter, but I thought that your guest was a little bit too dismissive of Hillary Clinton's complaints of her coverage in the press. And if you look at this latest incident with David Schuster, if you kind of look beyond the kind of inartful way he said it, what he was actually doing was criticizing her for having her daughter campaign for her, which I think every candidate has, you know, relatives campaigning for them. You didn't see MSNBC, anyone on MSNBC call...
All five sons of Mitt Romney, I think, for example.
Yeah, that Mitt Romney was pimping out Tag or something like that. I mean, I think she's got a really strong case to make that there are criticisms that she's getting from members of the press that other candidates don't. You know, and that's been going on for a long time.
We should mention Mr. Schuster was suspended. Clinton campaign has argued that that's insufficient. But anyway, David Folkenflik, what do you think?
You're talking about Schuster there.
Yes.
You know, what Schuster said, you know, the pimped out that you mentioned at the beginning of the show was clearly problematic language. He initially sort of brushed off complaints, and by initially I mean sort of in the immediate complaints after he said that. You know, what he was trying to convey was she was being, perhaps a more felicitous term, was being trotted out by the Clinton camp to address people like significant donors and superdelegates and other people of influence who could help Senator Clinton in her bid and in this, you know, hard-fought horse race period. The phrase pimped out is, you know, wrong on all kinds of levels, and fairly quickly, NBC and certainly MSNBC and Mr. Schuster himself then came to apologize. The Clinton camp seemingly were saying this is not enough, saying, you know, they have to not only just do a temporary suspension, which they actually put in quotes, but they have to do more than this to make it up, as though they were calling for his head. The campaign is now saying, no, it's more that there's been a culture of dismissive comments. And certainly Chris Matthews ultimately backed off after he had said that Senator Clinton was only really able to be a credible candidate because of the philandering of her husband, President Clinton, and the guilt that somehow attached to that, that people felt they should do well by her. You know, Mr. Matthews had to backtrack from that as well. You know, I got to say, it's very interesting because cable news, perhaps differently than the newscast, as Tom Rosenstiel said, it tends to be a live forum. People say things in this day and age, people say things that are edgier because of the influence of what? Talk radio, because of the unregulated nature of, you know, YouTube and ways in which people communicate because of the punchline-driven commentary that often carries quite serious import on shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. You know, if John Oliver says that, as someone said to me recently, if John Oliver said what Mr. Schuster said, nobody would raise an eyebrow. There is a degree of difference on a straight news show, but the wall separating the two is not as thick as one might imagine.
Ted, thanks very much for the call.
No problem.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Lisa Shepherd, NPR's ombudsman, who joins us here in Studio 3A. As NPR's public representative, she's responsible to bring transparency to journalistic decision-making, and she writes about it on NPR.org. It's nice to have you back on Talk of the
Nation. Good to be here.
And I know that you've been writing about a lot of complaints you've been hearing from listeners, including complaints about early calls, particularly in the state of Missouri, on Super Tuesday.
NPR uses AP, and AP called that race for Senator Clinton at 11:03, and NPR waited until 11:27 and also called it for Clinton, and then it was pulled back within an hour, and NPR held on to it because of what happened in 2000. They mm-hmm. were understandably afraid that they made a call that was incorrect, or so it was seen at the time, and then if they pulled it back and then it turned out to be correct, you'd have that same flip-flop.
And that's hardly the only complaint you've heard.
That's hardly the only complaint I've heard. I have to say that I had a column on npr.org/ombudsman about Ron Paul, and it's of the four columns I've done since I started doing one in January, I've gotten the most comments on that. And it's because I do think that the media is not covering the phenomenon of Ron Paul, which I think is an interesting story. It wasn't just once in one day that he raised a record amount. It was twice. He came in second in Nevada. He won in,
A distant second.
But nonetheless, there are people out there. I live in Arlington, Virginia, and the most signs I see, I did a long bike ride yesterday, were for Ron Paul.
See if we get another caller on the line. This is Warner. Warner calling us from San Jose in California.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm calling because there's been no coverage generally, but also on NPR, about the current presidential race in the Green Party of the United States. We had four primaries last Tuesday in Massachusetts, Arkansas, Illinois, and California. And it seems to me that basic journalism includes covering the facts, and if you're not covering all the facts, you're not doing your job. And I've also not heard of anything about large-scale voting interference with Green Party members voting in Illinois, which occurred last Tuesday. And I want to know if NPR is going to cover the District of Columbia primary that's going to be happening tomorrow, including the Green Party primary.
Lisa Shepherd.
I don't think I can answer that, but let's hope that the political editor, Ron Elving, is listening, and I'm sure that NPR will be covering the Democratic primary in the district, for sure.
Republican primary, too.
And yes, of course.
Well, but that's the point. There's also another party's primary, the Green Party primary. The Libertarian Party, which is another smaller national party, also is not getting any coverage. And they have a full slate of presidential candidates also. I know because I saw their ballot with mine for the California primary.
Warner, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go now to Heather. And Heather's with us from New Haven in Connecticut.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'll go off the air for my answer. I want to state first, I'm a Ron Paul supporter, and my husband is for Obama, so that's fun. I'd like the media to sort of address the reality that, at large, they seem to, in some sense, hold an unregulated primary through the fact that they choose who to cover, who not to cover, which minor candidates or major candidates and all of that, and it seemed to me most blatant during the debates because of which candidates get questions, the time to answer the questions, et cetera. And how can that be remedied when, again, it seems rather obvious that there are certain candidates that have incredible appeal to everybody except all the people who are talking about them in the media.
Okay. Heather, thanks very much. Sounds like you've got other things to occupy your time there.
Oh, yeah. Shepherd's pie. Gotta
okay.
go.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's turn to David Folkenflik. Are Heather's criticisms valid, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, there's a winnowing process that occurs, but that the press is pretty good at following rather than necessarily leading. You know, Mike Huckabee, as he gained strength virally, as I've mentioned before, really started gaining a lot of coverage. The fact that he got under, you know, the Project for Excellence in Journalism's count 2% of the coverage last week seemed to miss the mark, particularly when you see what happened last weekend. If you look at back at Ron Paul, you know, I just looked at something like 3 or 4 dozen national polls in which Paul broke double digits once. And that was back in, I think, early to mid-December. Now, obviously, the national polls don't necessarily dictate what actually happens. People have to vote, and it makes a difference that they be able to, and it makes a difference that they be able to be exposed. But, you know, it's not just 4 or 5 people running. I mean, if you wanted to throw it open to every actual candidate who signs up, there'd be dozens and dozens of candidates. It would be impossible to allow anyone to speak meaningfully. I think that the networks, the cable networks, deserve to be scrutinized about how they do it. And one of the reasons the cable networks are doing it in this primary season, to raise it, to also address an earlier question, is that the broadcast networks don't think it's worth their time. You know, cable networks are trying to build the largest niche audiences they can. Broadcast audience, you know, is supposed to be several times larger. And except when there's intense interest, as there is during this primary season, and particularly on the Democratic side, they're not going to be able to build those audiences. Well, they're trying to construct meaningful debate so people can tease out some personality and policy differences between some of these major candidates, and the networks have to make choices. Ron Paul is a guy with real, strong, devoted support of a relatively, as far as we can judge, smaller band of voters. And the question is, how do you address the difference between the intensity and the size of his support?
David Folkenflik, who I apparently slandered earlier, that was Tom Rosenstiel's BlackBerry that was buzzing. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. Tom?
I would differ with David in one regard on this, and that is I think there's a point at which the winnowing process should begin, but that arguably it began far too early in 2007. If the so-called lesser-tier candidates were lesser-tier candidates back in the spring, there was no objective justification for that. The early polls are not meaningful enough. And if the campaign is about ideas, all the ideas should be aired out to some extent. I think there is a point at which the winnowing must occur, but it happened essentially from the outset in this cycle.
Let's go to Pat. Pat with us from Prescott, Arizona.
Hello. One complaint I would have, and I wanted to bring this up, is that there's, it seems to me that with the age of Google and all this internet stuff, that there's just not very much fact checking on what the candidates say. And as the example I brought up with your screener was that, for instance, I heard John McCain last night claim that he urged Rumsfeld to be fired, and so I looked on the internet and I could never find any example of him saying that. And, you know, he can just throw this stuff out there, but it seems like somebody should be able to go back and look over these statements, for instance. And he also said that he was against the way the war was going. Well, you know, I looked that up, and I found numerous quotes where he was saying stay the course into, like, late 2006. And I just think that's a problem, and I'll take my answer off there. Thanks.
Okay. Lisa Shepard.
Well, there are quite a few news organizations now that do fact-checking in a very disciplined and specific way. And then Brooks Jackson has
factcheck.org.
Factcheck.org. And the Washington Post started something. I think the New York Times does. I know the St. Pete Times. So I think it's important to bring those issues to these organizations if you think that things are not being accurately fact-checked.
I would say, though, that cable news does not have any systematic sort of checking. The only news program that I know of in which someone comes on at the end of the program and says, here's what we got wrong in the last half hour, is a show on ESPN called Pardon the Interruption. It's an innovation that they might consider occasionally on some of the newer media.
We're out of time, I'm afraid. We'll have this conversation, I'm sure, again before the National Party Political Conventions. Can you believe it? In 6 months from now, more than 6 months from now. And so let's regroup at a later time. Thank you all. David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent, with us from NPR's Bureau in New York. Thank you, David.
You bet.
Tom Rosenstiel, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, with us here in Studio 3A. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks.
And Lisa Shepard, NPR's ombudsman, and she can be reached at S. Shepard, excuse me, A. Shepard.
S-H-E-P-A-R-D.
At npr.org, and you can read her column at npr.org. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll go to the opinion page and hear five myths about those nefarious neocons. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join that conversation. Email us, talk at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.